During my stay here in Baltimore, in the Baltimore area, I've been reading verses from Description of the Kingdom of God, chapter 15 of Canto 3, chapter 15, and the verses that we're going to be reading this evening.
27.
Yeah. 27 through 31. Mainly we'll be focusing on verse 31. The scene is Lord Brahma is speaking to the demigods because the demigods are expressing to him their anxiety regarding darkness that's enveloped the entire universe. And they don't know what the cause of it is. They're afraid. Their duties are being disturbed. So they're seeking shelter from Lord Brahma, what's going on and what to do about it. So Lord Brahma is explaining, what he's going to get to is, from the previous chapter, Diti, Kashyapa and Diti, a pregnancy has been created at an inauspicious time, and as a result, two demons, twins, are within the womb of Diti, Hiranyakshi and Hiranyakashipu. But even before they have taken their birth, their influence is so extreme that the whole universe is being affected. And the demigods are seeking relief from Lord Brahma. What happened? How to make things better? So he hasn't right away explained, but he's getting there. He's described his four sons, the Kumaras, one time were traveling throughout the universe and beyond the universe into the spiritual sky, and they happened to go to Vaikuntha, and the details of many verses describing their experience, what they saw, what they heard, what they understood about the nature of Vaikuntha. Then Lord Brahma takes a little ecstatic break and just describes how wonderful these topics are and how unfortunate it is that people are absorbed in the other kind, the Gramya Katha instead of Krishna Katha, and the consequences of ordinary sound vibration contaminating the minds and the fortunate position of the human form of life, even compared to the demigods, because the human form of life is especially designed for self-realization, God-realization, and the topics about Vaikuntha and the residents of Vaikuntha and the Lord of Vaikuntha help bring living entities to that perfected position. Then he goes back to describing their experience. And that's where we ended up. This morning we discussed the ecstasy that they were feeling, incomparable happiness, just being in that atmosphere of Vaikuntha. And the reason is everyone in Vaikuntha is fixed upon the Supreme Lord, the worshipable person, the only worshipable person in all the three worlds, within this material creation, within the spiritual creation, as the Lord and Master of everyone and everything. And everyone is happy being in that position, and the nature of His happiness, the Lord's happiness, is the nature of that the happiness in that place as well. What was that? Anyway. So, I'm just going to read quickly their passing through the gates and then what happened. So, the story, I'm sure most of you or all of you are familiar with, but listen carefully, the details. After passing through the six entrances of Vaikuntha Puri, the Lord's residence, without feeling astonishment at all the decorations, they saw at the seventh gate two shining beings of the same age, armed with maces and adorned with the most valuable jewelry, earrings, diamonds, helmets, garments, etc. And there's 2 points in the short purport. One is, they were transcendentalists, they weren't enamored by the opulence of the gates of Vaikuntha and the things that they saw. They were rather fixed on seeing the Lord. Because they were fixed on seeing the Lord, they were neutral towards the opulences. The second point that's made is everyone, not only the two gatekeepers were of the same age, everyone is of the same age. No one appears to be older than anyone else. And then Prabhupada adds that they're all carrying the four symbols of Vishnu, even they're not Vishnu. The residents of Vaikuntha have opulences like the opulences of Vishnu. Text 28, the two doormen were garlanded with fresh flowers which attracted intoxicated bees and which were placed around their necks and between their four blue arms. From their arched eyebrows, discontented nostrils and reddish eyes, they appeared somewhat agitated. Comment in the purport is that everything there is fresh. It's not like the garlands after some time wilt. And the bodies, like the four arms, as the Lord has four arms, their bodies are of the same hue, bluish in hue, and four-armed like Lord Narayan and Vaikuntha. And then the verse now is saying that their facial features showed they were disapproval at these four little boys coming to the seventh gate. The great sages, headed by Sanaka, had opened doors everywhere. They had no idea of ours and theirs. With open minds, they entered the seventh door out of their own will, just as they had passed through the six other doors, which were made of gold and diamonds. Prabhupada explains that although they're the oldest next to Lord Brahma, they're the firstborn of Lord Brahma, so the oldest of any creatures existing in the universe, they appeared like little boys. The next verse says that their garments were the covering of the four directions. They were naked. And they had the innocence of little children. And Prabhupada writes, they entered the doors exactly like little children enter places without any idea of what it is to trespass. That's a child's nature. A child can enter any place and no one checks him. Indeed, a child is generally welcome in his attempts to go places, but if it so happens that a child is checked from entering a door, he naturally becomes very sorry and angry. That is the nature of a child. In this case, the same thing is happening. The childlike, saintly personalities entered all the six doors of the palace, and no one checked them. Therefore, when they attempted to enter the seventh door and were forbidden by the doormen, who checked them with their sticks, they naturally became very angry and sorrowful. An ordinary child would cry. But because these were not ordinary children, they immediately made preparations to punish the doorman. For the doorman had committed a great offense. Even to this day, a saintly person is never checked from entering anyone's door in India. This isn't India. The police will come if we try to go door to door distributing books or something. In the purport, Prabhupada writes that they were not duplicitous. What does duplicitous mean? Duplicity.
Like one thing in the mind and one thing is being correct.
Okay. Deception. Say one thing, do another thing. Say one thing, intend another thing. That's lying. Duplicity. Lead people to believe something, knowing very well something else. Pretending oneself to be something when in fact is something else. So duplicity, deceitfulness. So they didn't know such a thing. They were not just innocent like children. They were pure and innocent like children. So when they were checked, although their bodies were little, they were the wisest and the oldest amongst all. And we'll hear in a bit about anger from a transcendental position. The four boy sages, who had nothing to cover their bodies but the atmosphere, looked only 5 years old. This is not purport, this is the verse. This is Maitreya speaking, and also Brahma narrating to the demigods. They looked only 5 years old, even though they were the oldest of all living creatures and had realized the truth of the self. But when the porters, who happened to possess a disposition quite unpalatable to the Lord, saw the sages, they blocked their way with their staffs, despising their glories, although the sages did not deserve such treatment at their hands. There's a couple of things with this pastime that sometimes are described this way and sometimes are described that way. Sometimes this and sometimes that. So it's a little, you have to watch carefully which direction the message is tilting. Specifically, even in the Sanskrit of this verse, the personality of Godhead was displeased. Bhagavata pratikula shila. Pratikula. There's anukul and pratikul. What do those two terms mean? Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam. These are symptoms of surrender. Anukul is accepting something and pratikul is rejecting something. So, Bhagavata pratikula shilao. Shila means behavior. So, the Lord was displeased by their behavior. Bhagavata pratikula shilao. And why he was displeased is described in the purport. The four sages were the firstborn sons of Brahma. Therefore, all other living beings, including Lord Shiva, are born later and are therefore younger than the four Kumaras. although they looked like five-year-old boys and traveled naked, the Kumaras were older than all other living creatures and had realized the truth of the self. Such saints were not to be forbidden to enter the kingdom of Vaikuntha. But by chance, the doormen objected to their entrance. This was not fitting. The Lord is always anxious to serve sages like the Kumaras. But in spite of knowing this fact, the doormen astonishingly and outrageously prohibited them from entering. Now there's another description about why there's two other descriptions at least, why Jain Vijay prohibited them from entering. And one of the reasons is that they were not yet devotees. At least one explanation is they were Brahman realized, but one can't enter Vaikuntha unless one becomes a devotee. And one becomes a devotee by the mercy of the Lord in association with devotees. So their movements, there's a mix of how their movements are described. The mix is they were neutral, and then another is they were eager to see the Lord. Eager to see the Lord in this way, they passed through the gates of Vaikuntha, not attracted by anything of the opulence. But another, not attracted to the opulence, is because they were neutral. So, this is an example of sometimes it's explained over on this side and sometimes on that side. So because they weren't qualified with bhakti, that's why the Jai Vijay prohibited them from entering. But then there's this description that even from the gates of Vaikuntha, they just smelled the tulsi and the sandalwood paste anointing the lotus feet of the Lord, and just that entering into their nostrils, they became attracted to the Lord in his personal feature. They became bhaktas by associating with the fragrance from the Lord's lotus feet. And thus qualified to enter. And then there's this qualification of they had knowledge of the self, or they were self-realized. They had realized the truth of the self in the verse, or the translation. Atma tattva. Vidita atma tattva. They had knowledge, or they had realization of Atma Tattva, the knowledge of the self. It doesn't say they had knowledge of Bhagavan, but they had knowledge of the soul. It's the spiritual reality. And even so many expressions are there in the Bhagavatam of the importance of honoring one who has such knowledge of Brahman, knowledge that the Brahmanas are honored by the Supreme Lord. Of course, most importantly, Vaishnava Brahmanas. But there are Brahmanas that aren't Vaishnavas. And the Lord honors the Brahmanas, especially the Vaishnava Brahmanas, like Sudama. But the respect for those who are situated in knowledge of Brahman or the Brahmanas, Atma Tattva, the Lord respects. So in that sense, the Lord was displeased because they were not properly honored. There was, as this, I'll just read the sentence again from the purport. They had realized the truth of the self. Such saints were not to be forbidden to enter the kingdom of Vaikuntha. But by chance the doormen objected to their entrance. This was not fitting. The Lord is always anxious to serve sages like the Kumaras, but in spite of knowing this fact, the dormant, astonishingly and outrageously prohibited them from entering. So we're getting a description here that the Lord Narayan was displeased. There's yet another very elaborate explanation. I hope I can remember all the details of it. This appeared in a publication from Vrindavan on this topic, and it was based on commentary from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this pastime. And it goes something like this, that the personality of Godhead has 64 qualities, and one of them is he is expert, daksha. And one who is expert, one of the features, one of the aspects of being expert is by doing one thing, he's simultaneously accomplishing many things. He's not multitasking while chanting. He's, driving or doing his homework or doing a crossword puzzle or surfing on the internet. He's not multiprocessing. But rather, by one thing, he's accomplishing many things. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains like this. Jaya and Vijay, their rasa is servitorship. Part of this is also described in Madhurya Kadambini, but it's elsewhere described just in his commentary on this pastime, that their rasa in relation to Narayana is servitorship. So as the servants of Narayana, they just want to do whatever he wants them to do. And their particular service is they're gatekeepers. That's their service. So one time, Narayana wanted to take rest. That's a pastime. So he requested Jayant Vijay to guard his door. Don't let anyone in. I'm going to take rest. So being very obedient to the Lord, they were guarding his door, and the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, wanted to enter. And they were obedient to the Lord's instruction not to let anyone enter. And they prevented her from entering. Wait till he wakes. Don't disturb him. So she became angry. She didn't say anything to them, but she said something to her husband. And she said, "This isn't very nice. You should do something. This is Vaikuntha. They have to do their service nicely." And Lord Narayan didn't do anything because he understood that they were just doing what they were asked to do. They took it literally. Don't let anyone enter. Then this circumstance came by his arrangement to have the four Kumaras come to the gates of Vaikuntha, where later Jayant Vijay were not at his palace door, but at the seventh gate of Vaikuntha. So the situation arose where, by the Lord's arrangement, this, as Prabhupada writes, astonishingly and outrageously, they prohibited the Kumaras from entering. The Lord inspired Jayant Vijay to prohibit them from entering so that the Leela could take place. And the Leela that was to take place was the Kumaras became upset. We're going to hear the next verse about anger from a transcendentalist. And is that appropriate? Or is it not appropriate? But they became angry. And in their anger, they cursed the gatekeepers. Meanwhile, Narayana came to know, because he's omniscient, that his dear devotees have checked the four Kumaras from entering Vaikuntha. And he was in such a state of concern and anxiety that he immediately left the palace and went to that seventh gate. He went in such a hurry, he didn't even ride on Garuda. And he didn't even take his sandals. He just went barefoot and went immediately. And when he went to the gate, he immediately apologized. This is described in the Bhagavatam itself. He apologized to the Kumaras for the offense of the Jayan Vijay. And so the arrangement was being made. The arrangement was being made simultaneously to fulfill several things. One of the things that was being fulfilled was the desire of the goddess of fortune that Jayan Vijay should be reprimanded. So that arrangement was made. Jayan Vijay were cursed to take birth on earth, either as demons so many times or as three times, or as devotees more times. And they similarly had a desire. Their desire, described in Madhurya Kandavani and elsewhere, was that they understood that the Lord has, in addition to this mood of servant and master, he has secondary rasas. He has a chivalrous rasa. He likes combat. He likes to have a good tussle with somebody else that's qualified to tussle with him. And they were considering, but there isn't, who is there that's qualified that can tussle with Narayana? But if he so desires, we would like to do that service for him. If he so desires, we would like to do that service. So he made an arrangement to fulfill that desire. They would take the position of being opposed to him and give him a good tussle. They would be condemned to die, to go to earth and take birth as demons, and then he could have a fight with them in an extraordinary fashion. But as not in the mood of devotees, but the moods of the adversaries of the Lord for three births, and then return to Vaikuntha. So he was fulfilling the desires of the goddess of fortune. He was fulfilling the desires of Jayan Vijay to serve the Lord in that capacity. And he was showing by example the position of a leader. When a leader has a follower that does something wrong, the leader, qualified leader, takes the responsibility for the behavior of the subordinate. He didn't say, oh, they've done wrong, please forgive them. He said, I've done wrong, please forgive me. He took full responsibility for their wrongdoing. Now, this is in the spiritual world, and we're not in the spiritual world. At least I don't. We're trying to create a Krishna conscious atmosphere by our activities of hearing and chanting. In other words, a great personality, certainly the transcendentally great personality, we're representing Krishna when we're acting as devotees in whatever the capacity of service we're acting as devotees. Our good conduct or our misconduct reflects on our spiritual master and reflects on Krishna, reflects on our disciplic succession and our line, our whole society. I've said this dozens of times, more than dozens of times, but I'm, especially when I travel around wearing my dhoti and stuff like that, people don't know what the Hare Krishna movement is. They just know here's somebody wearing some religious cloth and the organization they're representing is being judged by the one person that they meet. Like I went to a dentist today. waited a while. You know, that's what happened. One of the things you do at dentist's offices, you wait a while. And then, you know, they were going to take an x-ray. So the lady's getting set up to do the x-ray, tooth x-ray. And, you know, she starts some chit-chat. Oh, your birthday's coming real soon. She said, my daughter's, her birthday's 2 days after yours, and I'm really thinking about what to get her as a birthday present. Then she turned around and looked at me and she said, oh, look at that nice color. I said, I'm glad you like it. It wasn't, you know, what's the meaning of the color and what's the stuff on your forehead? Those are usual questions. But, you know, just interacting with a staff member, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm, you know, a moving target, just wearing a dhoti and shaved head and tilak. And all of you, as you move about, it's maybe less obvious to other people. But in course of time, people that you interact with come to know you're a little different. And they may come to know more than that. They may come to know you're a religious person. They may come to know more than that you're a Hare Krishna devotee. And they're judging the whole of the organization just based upon you. It just happens that way. Like it or not, it happens that way. Some people can make a distinction. Here's an individual and the organization might be different, but most people don't go that far. It's just that your behavior and your qualities reflect on the organization itself. So just have good qualities and have good behavior, and it helps. It's strengthen the appreciation of people for Krishna, even they don't know who Krishna is. Or the Krishna consciousness movement, even though they don't know what the Krishna consciousness movement is. Just like some persons, there was a period of time where the zealousness of those distributing books used methods of distributing books that reflected badly on the organization. I remember my brother at one time, as a brahmachari, I was part of the airport party distributing books at the O'Hare Airport. And I didn't know this, but my brother was in one of the top floors of the Sears Tower. He was a district sales manager for something, something, something. And so he wanted to come and see me, so we got together. And he said, you know, at the lunch table, when the topic of Hare Krishna's comes up, people don't have a clue what you people are about. You know, they don't know that my brother's a Hare Krishna guy. But, you know, I can tell you what they speak, and it's not favorable. And they just speak about, you know, your methods of distributing books. And they don't know at all what's in the books. They don't know anything about the people that are living according to what the books say. They just know that you're very aggressive in your methods of distributing books. So it's reflecting bad on your organization. I think you should do something about that. I said, yeah, I think you're right. But, so, I said, you know, I personally don't do like that. But I know that there are persons that do like that, and we should do something. We should correct it. Then there's another, just like this is not exactly the purport, this is taking a point that our Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is expressing, that the Supreme Lord is showing by his Leela that a master takes the responsibility for the conduct of his disciples or his students or his followers or his representatives or whatever. In this case, Jain Vijay representing Lord Narayan. He responded one way to Lakshmi and responded another way to the Kumaras. Because they were just doing what they were supposed to do, in one sense. In another sense, they were displeasing because they were sadhus. not just little children, but they were sadhus. They were the eldest, senior most, learned, realized persons. They should be treated with dignity and respect. Maybe some of you have read, I know at least a few of us in the room have read, Borijan's book, My Glorious Master. And Borijan's one of my dear friends and favorite devotees. I received my first Krishna conscious literature from his hand when we were in college together, and many other things over a period of time. So I read the book with a lot of interest, because there was a period of time when I kind of lost touch with him, and part of the reason I lost touch with him is he had pulled back a bit from close association with devotees, because he was also troubled by the methods of aggressive book distribution. It rubbed him the wrong way. He felt badly that it was giving Prabhupada a bad name, and our movement a bad name under the banner of we're pleasing Prabhupada. He felt they're not pleasing Prabhupada. It wasn't just, he wasn't alone in that mood. Besides people outside, even people within inside our organization felt unhappy about it. So he started doing some service in a quiet way, but you know, not in the mix of everything. And Prabhupada, just fast forwarding some, you know, a lot of details, but Prabhupada very kindly invited him to come and travel with him, because Prabhupada knew his heart, he was troubled. But he didn't sit him down and say, what are you troubled about? He just gave his association, and wonderful exchanges in various ways were described. And then one situation arose where Borijan was in a one-on-one situation with Prabhupada in his room, and he understood that this was an opportunity, I can disclose my heart. So he disclosed his heart, very disturbed by the method of book distribution. And it was a pregnant moment. It was an opportunity where, you know, what is Prabhupada going to say to him? How is Prabhupada going to change his heart? And what he said was very, very significant, very profound. The exact language is important, and I can't remember the exact language, but something to the effect that don't criticize, do better. You know, I've given an instruction to distribute my books. You don't like the way that the books are being distributed. You do it better. Rather than saying, I don't like the way they're distributing books. Show by method, by personal example, this is better. This is a more effective, more suitable way of distributing books. And then you can say, you can invite others, this is a better, more, rather, but so don't criticize. According to their ability, their capacity, their intelligence, the gifts that God has given them, they're doing what they're doing. That doesn't mean that Prabhupada approved of what they were doing. I'll give another example of that. This is just the ways of our founder Acharya. He got on the case of those that were misrepresenting, distributing his books. But to Borijan, it was, don't criticize. By example, show how to do it better. So, in another situation, somebody, I'll leave the name out, had done something very bad. Not just inappropriate, but very, very bad. He was a leader. He'd done something very bad. And then we'll end. When the Kumaras, although by far the fittest persons, were thus forbidden entrance by the two chief doorkeepers of Srihari, while other divinities looked on, their eyes suddenly turned red because of anger, due to their great eagerness to see their most beloved master, Srihari, the Personality of Godhead. Now this sounds like they're devotees. They want to see the personality of Godhead. They don't want to just wander meaninglessly through gates like little children. They had a transcendental purpose. Eager to see their divine master, most beloved master. Sounds like they're devotees. And if they're devotees of such level and capacity, they can go all the way to Vaikuntha, how come they're becoming angry? Like, we'll take Chivas Thakur. When he was thrown out of the assembly of the devotee who was giving the Bhagavatam dissertation, that was yet an unqualified person, but he was speaking some message of the personality of Godhead from the Bhagavatam, and just hearing that message, he became ecstatic and he fell to the ground in an unconscious state. And the persons that were attending the function, Devananda Pandit speaking, they didn't know what he was, and they picked him up and threw him out, literally threw him out. They made this even a worse offense, not just a verbal offense, a corporeal offense. He didn't become angry. And other examples one can call on, that Haridas Thakur, you know, different things, never became angry. So here's the Kumaras becoming angry. So even if they're Brahmavadis, why are they being angry? If they're devotees, why are they being angry? Is it appropriate for a devotee to be angry? The purport is discussing. They're, in short, we'll discuss in more detail tomorrow morning, but in short, their unhappiness was not the unhappiness of sense gratification. The unhappiness was that their service was being interfered with. It wasn't their own happiness, it was the service of the Lord. The way it's being described here. It wasn't sense gratification, it was their service to the Lord is being impeded by persons who were to be qualified, but they weren't qualified. It's inspired by the personality of Godhead in any case, because it's his pastime. Like the Vaikuntha Vasis, the Vishnu Dutas, when they stopped the Yamadutas from taking Ajamila to Yamaraj, it's not so dissimilar, the Vishnu Dutas and the Yamadutas having this discussion about, you know, what's Dharma. So why they couldn't just have a discussion with the gatekeepers that said, well, wait a minute, what's the standard of who can enter, who can't enter? Please explain. If you don't get it right, then you should let us enter. But instead they became angry. So when is it appropriate to get angry, and when is it appropriate to have some discussion, make sure you understand one another and those kinds of things. There's a transcendental teaching. Maritam Das Thakur sings about it in one song and writes about it, that everything has its utility in the Lord's service, like the example given of Hanuman becoming angry when going to Lanka and seeing Sita in that condition. He displayed anger. In part it was to warn Ravana and his buddies, you're going to get it. Ram is going to come and destroy you all. I'm just this little monkey, but what way do you meet Ram? So it was to give courage to Sita and admonish the demons for their wrongdoing, and to give a signal that Ram is going to come soon. It was an act of chivalry. But it was some exhibition of anger. Now he did it in a very intelligent way. He allowed himself to be captured so he could get some information, some intelligence, and give it back to, you know, the central intelligence team back in India. But he exhibited anger. So here, anyway, there's times when it's appropriate, not appropriate. But just doesn't mean that when anger is exhibited, this is the sign the person is a fallen materialist. Prabhupada spoke about it. There were times when he exhibited anger. Just one of the examples that comes to mind is in Bhurijan's book. Prabhupada was invited one time, if I can recall correctly, it was Hong Kong. Hong Kong? Did you read the book? My Glorious Master? It was Hong Kong?
I don't know which
pastor
you're talking
about. There was a Mayavadi.
Tokyo.
It was Tokyo? You read it. Tokyo. One of those places. Tokyo. And Prabhupada was also in town, so they invited Prabhupada to come also. And Prabhupada accepted, and Bhurijan was very surprised because Prabhupada normally didn't accept any invitations like that. Prabhupada got there first. They had a big seat that was meant for the impersonalist teacher, and a little seat for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada went right away and sat in the big seat. Purposefully. And then they were very embarrassed, and they tried to get Prabhupada to take another seat, and Prabhupada pretended like he didn't understand them. And he stayed in the big seat, and then, you know, the impersonalist yogi came, and, you know, he was supposed to get the big seat, and he got the little seat. And then he was speaking, the impersonalist was speaking. Prabhupada, I can't remember who spoke first. Who spoke first?
Prabhupada.
And he was letting him have it, you know, nonsense Mayavadi. And then the Mayavadi was speaking, and Prabhupada was biting his lip and becoming angry and more angry and more angry and more angry. And then he just burst out and interrupted him and let him have it, right in the middle of the assembly, and everyone was going, oh my God, you know. And later Prabhupada was saying, because the man was speaking in Hindi, and Bhurijan couldn't understand. So later he said, Prabhupada, what happened? He said, he was speaking of Krishna in such a way, I couldn't take it. He was offending Krishna. Speaking in all this, not just impersonal nonsense, but offensive to Krishna, I couldn't take it. I had to speak something. So he exhibited, that's the right, this utilization of transcendental anger when defending the honor of Krishna. Or Krishna incited Arjuna to anger. In order to fight, there must be anger. So he's inciting Arjuna, become angry. Don't go to a forest and live in a cave and avoid the war because there's fighting. No, go and fight and exhibit anger for Krishna's service. Like that. There's room, not just for a kshatriya, but for a brahmana to exhibit anger in the right circumstance. For most part, we're best not exhibiting anger. Because we're not on the transcendental platform. That will make some big mess somewhere with all of everything. But for a transcendentalist, there is a place for it. Okay, I'm going to give one more class. We'll go into more of this in the detail because it's a long purport. One and a half pages, but details on the appropriateness. If you're curious, you can read text 31 on your own. When is it appropriate to exhibit anger in service to Krishna, not in, you know, my desire was frustrated. So in fact, it doesn't even use the word krodha or anger. it's that the language that's used is the younger brother of lust. That's what's in the Sanskrit. Because they, lust and anger have the same mother. And the older brother that comes first is lust. And lust that's frustrated, ardent desire that's frustrated becomes anger. So anger is the younger brother. Which is very interesting because it looks like, it sounds like the Kumaras who are Brahman, either Brahman realized or had this intense desire to serve and see the Lord, were influenced by passion and then later transforming into anger. Looked like, but it's not, it's a transcendental manifestation, not a worldly one. To be continued. Any discussion? Yes?
Guru Maharaj, this Bhagavata Pratikula Sila, Lord is displeased with Kumara or the Jayavijaya?
Jayavijaya.
Oh, because they prevented.
Should I read it again? Yes. They were not to have been checked. They were checked. He was displeased by that. That's the reading in this verse. There's later verses that speak something else. I already went over them. So you're not confused, are you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Next question is,
yeah,
from the morning class, like, Durvas Muni, he entered the spiritual realm. So, was he a yogi?
He was a yogi.
So, by mystic perfection, he can go to spiritual realm?
Did you hear the class this morning?
That time, the volume went down, Guru Maharaj, so I couldn't
figure out. The word that's used in the verse is yogamaya. Yogamaya balena. There was the strength of yogamaya. So he can tell you, because he was like going, yeah, when I was explaining this. Mystic powers, according to the explanation given in Nectar Devotion, they're material. They're material laws that are being manipulated in a subtle way, but they're material laws. So, from this morning class, there's no way, I said it 4 or 5 times, there's no way that by subtle manipulation of material laws one can enter Vaikuntha. So I don't need to say it 5 times because you understand it. But he was able to enter Vaikuntha. So that meant there was something, yes. Similarly, so by the Lord's arrangement. Otherwise, not possible. Not by subtle manipulation of material laws. And silly, the Kumaras. But the Lord made the arrangement. Because, you know, they wanted to serve in that way, so he gave them the facility to serve in that way, by this arrangement. So he was displeased with them. Okay? Okay. Yes?
Four Kumaras were Brahmavadis, right?
Yes.
So, and according to my understanding, they smell tulsi.
It's nectar of instruction. Nectar of devotion, directly stated there.
So, that time they become devotee?
That is one of the very clear, not at all unclear, completely clear explanations that were provided. What do we know? We know what we hear from disciplic succession. So we've heard that. It's very clearly presented. So yes, the answer is yes. Then comes, you know, the yeah, but Here, we're hearing that their anger was due to their great eagerness to see their most beloved master. That's dasirasa. It's bhakti. It's not chantarasa. It's bhakti. So, you know, where's the time sequence? Was it at the sixth gate or maybe somewhere earlier they smelled the fragrance of, it's, you know, that isn't explained. When, the chronology of all of this. It's a lila. And they had it very clearly. They're Brahma bodies. Somehow or other they came to the position of devotees. The detail when is not presented. And there may be other factors besides the one factor that we read in Nectar of Devotion. Anything else?
Isn't the sequence though that so when the Lord comes, like
then they smell.
Yeah. Because he doesn't even take the Garuda, he comes and then they smell it.
Yeah. I didn't read that far yet. Look ahead. But here it's clear. You want to, you know, the Sanskrit. Here's the Sanskrit. We'll cover it more tomorrow. Suhrit Tama, most beloved, Didrikshita, eagerness to see. So that's not, you know, Brahmavadi. Something happened to move from Brahmavadi to eagerness to see their beloved master. Something else? Yes.
I have a question in regards to controlling of anger. I don't know if we should do this for tomorrow or...
You can go ahead.
In the Nectar of Instruction, the way I understood is the right way to control anger is to use it at the appropriate times.
Yes.
Like you described.
Yes.
Blasphemy of devotees of God.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
But we don't get too many situations where we encounter that. So that means we are not left with any way to control anger.
Controlling anger doesn't mean you're looking around for an opportunity to use it. Controlled anger means when there is the appropriate circumstance, then it appears. That's not how to control it is looking for a circumstance. Rather, controlled means when there is a circumstance, then only.
So instead of totally suppressing it...
That's not suppressing it. If there's an appropriate circumstance, you use it. And if not, you don't use it. A tongue. And you know, the tendency is, you know, have it make some noise. Any kind of noise. There's a tendency, the urge to speak. Just like that's in that section. vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam. So the urge to speak, you use it for elevating purposes, and otherwise you don't. And similarly, anger, if there's an appropriate circumstance, you use it, and otherwise you don't. Okay. Yes?
Jay and Vijay taking the instruction from Lord Narayana to monitor the gate, they literally applied it, not deviation, right? Like, Lakshmi Jay came.
And he was supportive of them.
So, it's a transcendental lila, but
yes.
It doesn't happen to normal circumstances.
Why not?
When one takes the instructions, say...
I gave you an example of what Prabhupada said to us. I've given you an instruction to follow your authorities, and you followed your authorities. Please know that any of the wrong things that were done, you're not responsible for them. Means he was taking responsibility for them. We followed. We did what he told us to do. So we're not responsible. He didn't say it, but that meant he's taking responsibility. And he did. He let the persons that didn't inform him when they should have, let him have it. So?
So, that means one should not actually, apply their own intelligence to...
No, it doesn't mean turn your intelligence off. This is where it takes a little bit of common sense, a little bit of refined, how do I apply a thing? I've given this example in other circumstances where the devotees didn't want to hear it. Because when somebody's, there are other examples that can be given where when someone is, like they say these days, if you see something, say something. Whether it's crass and rude and disrespectful, doesn't matter. If you see something, say something. That's not right. So what should one do if one sees something in an appropriate manner? So what is an appropriate manner? First of all, in the mood of service, and then to the right person in the right way at the right time. One may say something. Now we have systems little gradually coming into place. We have systems where if something is going wrong, there are ways to express it, or places to go to express it, not just like a suggestion box, but there are people that one can go to in a community or, say, within our society. We have an ombudsperson. Maybe you know that from your corporate experience, what an ombudsperson is. Yes? Do you know? In a conventional sense, an ombudsperson is like a village elder. In a village elder, you can go to in confidence and say, there's something happening over here. Whatever it is, there's something happening in our family. We want to keep it private, but we need some intervention from somebody that's, respected by everybody. So, companies have that, I'm familiar with it from universities. Because universities get to be really vicious sometimes. You don't necessarily know it unless you're in the university field. Or the administration or the academic part, it gets nasty. So the ombudsperson is a confidential individual. Vajrabihari is and Shesha Prabhu and Brahmatirtha in Alachua, Florida. Maybe you don't know him. There are three persons that are global ombudspersons. The ombudsperson is, they're Mr. Neutral. They don't have an administrator hat. They just, the military probably has ombuds people also, right? Gopal?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah, they must. So, you know, somebody, obscure, private somebody, has an issue. You know, somebody's really just ridiculous. You know, Sergeant Ridiculous is being really ridiculous. So what's the private to do? Just suffer at the hands of Private or Sergeant Ridiculous. So there is an ombuds person. Rajavihari is that person in ISKCON. You know, Vishnu Das in Okefenokee Swamp can call up Rajavihari and say, you know, there's this temple president over here that's worse than the alligators, and and you know, if I say anything, my name's Mud. So, but you know, I'm concerned about him. I don't want to just like get him, but you know, I think if he had some guidance and maybe some association, maybe a bang or two on the side of the head, it would help him. And so, you know, but please don't use my name. It's in confidence. Okay, it's in confidence. And, you know, here are some of the things that I might do. Here's 10 things. Which of them might you prefer that I do? Or here's some things that you might do. But, it's, you know, it's in strict confidence. So then, you know, the person can go and say, you know, whatever he wants to do. He has the freedom, he has the authority to move about because they're respected. They can move in different circles and say, you know, find out, is this true, or, you know, something. To try to bring about a peaceful solution to something, to some situation where one may be not empowered with some position of authority, but you see something and maybe I don't have the whole picture, but I'm concerned. So you go and express your concern to an ombuds person. That's a possibility. That's a possibility. Or another is, you know, the appeal process. In this case, this was somebody that wasn't behaving properly. So take it to that person's authority. That person's authority at the time was Prabhupada. He was answerable to Prabhupada. He was our GBC. And he was misbehaving. Finally, the president removed him. Literally just, you know, packed his bags and took him to the sidewalk and closed the gate. Everyone was, yay, at last. So appealing to someone's authority. Or we have, you know, let's say in North America, if some temple president somewhere is not behaving, they have their GBC. We have our North American leadership group. Sometimes things go to that leadership group. And then we discuss amongst ourselves what to do about this situation, that situation that's out of hand. Somebody needs to, you know, they may need just to invite them in for some discussion. They may need a stick. They may need something. So there's persons to go to help them. But let those persons do, rather than, you know, making a little political scene over here, another political scene over there, that the pro and the con, and the for and against, and then it gets... So there, you can educate yourself if there's some situation you see that's out of hand. Where do I take this? Besides just follow. There are options that, along with just following, I can just follow but also try to help the situation. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Yes and no. Do you have a particular circumstance in your mind maybe you want to ask me later?
I was trying to ask how not to understand the instruction improperly.
Oh, that's a very different question. Very different question. You ask for clarification, that's how. That's what Arjuna did. And it's not wrong, it's right. It's not offensive, it's respectful. I want to make sure I understand the instruction. So, Can I get a little clarification here? This part is clear, but that part is not yet clear. It could be this or that or the other thing. Can you make it clear? Arjuna did like that. It's perfectly appropriate. Okay. I'm sorry, I went the wrong direction. Anyone else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, he died.
Yeah.